The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all, welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 34, and I'm flying solo today. The boys are out working in the field and not in the crop field or with the cows. They're actually doing some construction work through that company they set up. So I'm flying solo, but I am really pumped because I have an awesome guest, and I can almost promise you, much to everyone's chagrin, that you've probably never heard of my next guest. He's a very awesome guy, he's a great researcher. He's written some incredible books, and that's how I stumbled across him, was through his books, and he agreed to come on the Fearless Podcast today. I wanted to welcome y'all to Barry James Dyke. Hey, Barry, how you doing today?
I'm great today, TD. Who said that? In times of universal deceit, telling the truth. I think it was George Orwell, wasn't it?
That's an Orwell quote. Yes, sir. It's so appropriate. In postmodern America, I thought that was a great way to start the podcast.
it's great. We're living very Orwellian times, TD.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that really is what brings me to your books. For those of you that don't know, I do have a financial background, and you know, I went to government school, and then I went to government college. You know, because I was that generation. I was born in 75, and you know, your program, go to school to get a good education so that you get a good job so that you can retire with a pension. And then that whole pension thing kind of changed in my childhood. And that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. And that's kind of what the Pirates of Manhattan is all about. And Barry, maybe that's how we can open up. You wrote this first book, The Pirates of Manhattan, and who are the pirates?
Well, it's essentially Wall Street. The Pirates of Manhattan are essentially, I call it, it's really kind of expanded to the asset management industrial complex, if you will. So not just the Wall Street banks, but all the, you know, the mutual fund companies, the hedge funds, the private equity firms, which are really kind of been taking over everyone's savings. And I make a long story short, you know, if people read the book, you know, go to barryjamesdyke.com. It's still TD today. Still, I'm amazed. I get orders from all around the world on the book. And, it's really about how Wall Street controls and asset managers control everybody's savings. And the irony of the whole thing, there's a guy by the name of, Louis Brandeis, there's Brandeis University in Massachusetts, and he ended up becoming, he was a brilliant, sophisticated Jewish entrepreneur, whistleblower type of guy for the time. And he wrote a book called Other People's Money, and which was published in 1914. And the funny thing is, TD, nothing's really changed. Mm. Okay. It's actually probably gotten worse. The only difference is now we have internet and four-wheel drive vehicles and what have you, you know, but people, I think people are dumber. I think people were smarter 100 years ago, but that's just my opinion.
Well, so what happened to me, you know, I went to college to get this good job. I was a business admin major. I had a minor in finance, and here I am. I'm working as an intern for a very large financial planning firm. And I'm in my different investing classes, and my Keynesian college professor, well, first they tell me about GDP and national debt, and as long as the GDP is greater than the national debt, everything's cool. And I'm like, well, that doesn't even make common sense. The second thing that she mentioned, we argued about that, but I have a tendency to do that. But the second thing that she mentioned is she said 98% of all investments fail. And I said, wait a minute. Like, that can't be true, because there's all these brokerage houses, there's all these financial planners and retirement experts. And statistically, how can 98% of all investments fail? So long story short, I graduate and do all that good stuff. And I'm at this financial planning firm. I'm a junior partner. Well, I'm the guy doing the prep for all the annual reviews because we charged an annual planning fee. We did annually or quarterly planning, whatever. So I would use a software called Morningstar Principia Pro.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would do the stock overlap and all stuff. And we were real. Our practice was almost no stocks, almost exclusively mutual funds. And what I started seeing was all this hokey pokey with the big fund families and their five-star funds. They would stuff their five-star funds with their one-star funds that were against the asset allocation. And I'm like I said, this is the definition of a Ponzi scheme. Like it's not in the asset class. This is a total, and it's one of the top 10 holdings in this particular asset class. And it's a completely different asset class. And it's the same fund family. I'm like, that's when the light bulb went off for me. And I'm like, wow, this whole thing is a Ponzi scheme and it's a scam and they're scamming everybody. And so that's how I stumbled across it in a very layman way. I certainly don't have the amount of, I'm a street smart kid. I'm not really like intellectually smart. Certain concepts are a little bit harder for me to explain or teach to others. And that's what I really love about your books. They're very easy to understand. Your research is impeccable and all your books are like the facts are there. The quotes are there. The charts are there. The proof's in the pudding. The numbers don't lie. And you just went right down and you basically that small little portion of it that I stumbled across. I mean, you've exposed that to the next level where it's institutional and really, you know, these pirates, they've kind of hijacked all things fiat, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Chidi, there's no question about it. And, I think, you know, I'm so grateful we live in a great country that we do. I certainly don't want to live in a place like Mexico or, you know, anywhere, you know, at this point. But the tragedy is, and this is what Brandeis said in 1914, it's the quick capital of others, essentially how Wall Street gets ahead. So essentially, it's always about gambling with other people's money. And yeah. And people say, well, read all my books, and I say, look at folks. This is all you have to really know is that they're gambling with the other people's money and there's no accountability, you know, and actually a friend of mine who just read the one of my next books. I'm coming out with two books in 24, by the way, which is,
okay.
You know, so I'm at that age now. I want to get this stuff out into the media, but to help people. But this friend of mine who's I have a following. I have a separate planning business with pilots. I believe and I have a following with airplane pilots called the Prosperous Pilot. But one of these pilots who read the book is also a very good friend of mine. And, he flies all these high-end executives around the world and stuff. But he said, after reading the book, he said, what amazes me, the corruption is still so big and there's no accountability.
Yep. Not only is the corruption so big and there's no accountability, they're guaranteed by the government and all the other forces that work together that they can't fail. So they're insured in a sense that they can't fail because they'll get printed out of the mess that they create. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And this is kind of getting ahead of my the Pirates 3, which we released later this summer. Okay. But to get ahead, you know how much banks, international banks and asset managers have paid in fines since 2011, TD? Just take a guess how much they paid in fines.
Since 2011. So we're talking about,
20 years.
Yeah, yeah. 100 billion? 200 billion?
About a third of $1 trillion. More than a third of $1 trillion.
Wow. Yeah, you get to, you know, it's pay to play, you know, like.
Yeah, and the whole thing is that it's the, people don't realize, but the shareholders who own these banks, okay, and it is, you know, whether it be Bank of America or JP Morgan, whatever, Wells Fargo, fraud, whatever. It's actually the it's the corporation's write off is an operating expense, and right. And then the shareholders are the ones that really pay for it.
Yeah.
So you know, so it's just was it, I think Morgan Stanley it was yeah it was Morgan Stanley this past week or two. Okay, couldn't make this stuff up. Okay, they get fined $250 million for fraudulent block trades, essentially trading against their customers.
Right.
So here's the, one of the largest investment banks in the United States. No question, TD. Okay. If people don't believe me, Google it. Morgan Stanley gets paid $249 million for block trades, essentially trading against their own clients. And no one goes to jail.
Right. Not only that, they paid that small fine, but if truth be known, they made several billion dollars or maybe $100 billion off the transaction. So who cares if you have to pay a small fee to participate? Because that's really what it is. They're paying a fee so that they can participate in the thievery.
Yeah. And so, but the irony of the whole thing too, TD, which is really, and people don't believe me, they can go to Yahoo and figure this out. It's not, I'm not making this stuff up, is that you go on to, let's say BlackRock, okay, which is the largest asset manager in the world. Mm-hmm. Go to Yahoo Finance, okay, .com and put in BlackRock and go in and look at who the major shareholders are. Now, BlackRock, which is the largest asset manager in the world, is actually owned by other mutual fund companies.
Yeah.
And they're all passive. So they're kind of like, I call them communist funds. So they don't do anything, okay?
Right.
So Vanguard or State Street or Invesco or the, I forget, there's a, I'll think of it probably later, but, or Fidelity or something like that, they all own shares of the company and nothing happens.
Yeah.
And actually as of this week, officially talk about Morningstar, there's more money in passive and ETFs and mutual funds than any active management. So it's this wolves in sheep's clothing, you know?
Yeah, and you can't even explain this. I just stumbled across a guy on Twitter. His name is Ian Carroll, and he's real big on TikTok. And he just demonstrated some unanimous guy on Reddit has compiled all these numbers, right? And he proposes it as this concept called Megacorp. And he shows you BlackRock, Blackstone, State Street, and he shows this guy did the cross mapping of all these transnational mega corporations, and all of them, like, so he goes into big ag, big food, all the technocratic categories, right? And they show the overlap, and basically they all own each other. So there's very small personal shares owned by the
yeah, that's right. Well, yeah.
So we own a very small portion, and everything else is all cross ownership by these transnational corps. All their CEOs are paid in stock dividends. So when they do all these mergers and acquisitions, and when they do all these buybacks, they're stuffing their pockets, relatively speaking, totally tax-free. I mean, they're making hundreds of millions a year tax-free, and they're sloshing money back and forth between each other. And meanwhile, what happens is that small sector of the shareholders, like the average people that are actually in the market, that's where all that capital is siphoned off. And it goes into this big swirling tank of control. So that OPM, you know, they've extracted other people's money. And that's why I've been saying the stock market is nothing more than a redistribution of wealth. And we hear all this new speak in, you know, postmodern America about your fair share and redistribution. And, you know, now we got to redistribute.
ESG.
Yeah, yeah. ESG, DEI, you know, and we got to transfer all this stuff, and they've already extracted. That's why they have to continue to create derivatives. And now these new derivatives is they're going to try to monetize the soil, and they're going to maybe through their central bank digital currency or whatever, they're going to assign a value to the biome in your soil. So, you know, you'll own nothing and be happy. You won't even own the biomass in your soil that produces food for you. And they'll somehow monetize it and extract it, you know, and they're going to, well, how are they going to do that? Carbon credits, you know, they're going to be like, oh, you have so many square feet of dirt, that dirt's bioavailability is X. So if you like that dirt, if you like your dirt and you want to keep your dirt, you know, here, if you pay this carbon credit, then you can keep your dirt, you know, it's wild.
Yeah. So T, that's going on. So, you know, a lot of the stuff is just, you know, the beauty of the internet, okay, is that you can research, you can verify everything, because even the research I've done, you know, on the next two books, you know, 20 years ago, you couldn't have done this, you know, but I've done now. I mean, it's just, but unfortunately, also they put up a lot of paywalls now. And so, but I subscribe to a lot of journals and things like that. And so to verify everything, but what has happened, you know, this whole sexual crap, but anyway, yeah. I think one of the biggest issues I think today, TDD, is really economic inequality. And, you know, and I'm a capitalist, I own a business, you're an entrepreneur, I've owned businesses for, you know, I hate to say it, 40 years. And so I'm a small businessman, I get it. Okay, I know what it's like to maintain a payroll and all this crazy stuff, as you know, to maintain a business, but they've really kind of really crushed the little guy. And yes. They have done that. And so they're doing it with other people's money. And so, which kind of leads me into the book I'll be coming out in, which actually, I just got an email from one of my editors another version, I'll look at it on Saturday, which is done. But this whole cryptocurrency craze,
yeah,
what a scam that one was.
It's so, you know, I've had a lot of friends. I've been researching it a long time. I'll never understand it. And I've always had great reservation because, you know, once you see the stock market's a scam, and I got out in 08 and I've never put a penny back in. Once you see that's a scam, it really makes the whole crypto and all these other bogus coins. And it's all just, they call one Ethereum, and it's literally they grab the ether and they put a name on it and then they put a dollar amount to it. It is so completely artificial. It is a complete derivative. And then, you know, there's tons of Bitcoin guys and they'll say, hey, man, but this is just like, you know, it's a modicum of exchange and everything else. But it's just as a derivative, and it's just as contrived as all these other synthetic derivatives, whether it's collateralized debt obligations or mortgage-backed securities. It's the same exact concept, philosophy, and intent, and there's nothing there, and there's no store of value. You know, gold has a store of value. Hey, this will go right into a great conversation because you mentioned it. You're a capitalist. I'm a capitalist. And one of the points that I try to make is, you know, we say we're capitalists. We talk about capitalism, but what is capital? You know, my definition of capital, relatively speaking, is savings, right? That's your capital. You have to be a saver. You have to accrue and acquire and stockpile capital, right, in order to be able to invest, right? And that's where it's all, and you know, and we're both whole life guys, so we get it. But like, maybe talk about capital. I mean, I think that's so lost on a modern.
Well, yeah. Well, unfortunately, in America today, and actually, I forget the statistic on it. Maybe I can pull this up right now. Savings. It's one of my manuscripts. Let me see if I can pull this up. Savings rate. So I can share this with you. Now, the whole thing is that savings rate. All right, maybe another. Let's see. But I know it offhand. But, maybe hang on 1 second. Any event, I've got the latest figures, TD. This is becoming one of the books, but I do know one thing. So we have two problems. First of all, we have a savings rate, and America doesn't say. People don't say. I mean, if you really look at there's a organization called Organization for Economic Cooperation Development based out of Paris, but it's nonpartisan, essentially pure research stuff, which I kind of lap up, you know. So if you really look at the true savings rate in America, roughly it's, I think Norway, they save maybe 20% of their income, you know, and but the U.S. is, I think maybe we're three during the 2008, 2007, we're actually negative.
Negative.
So it's horrible. And there's a huge difference between savings and investing. You got to save before you invest. Okay.
Yep,
but, right. But America is, you got to put everything in the market, 401k, and everything's locked up for the next 20, 30 years. And, you know, and, so we have a horrific savings rate, but we also have horrible retirement plans. Now there's a study done by Mercer, and this is not me. So this will be in the book. Okay. Mercer out of Australia. They do it each year. They look at the retirement plan preparedness. And you know where the US of A stands, TD, in the top 20?
I do, because I've listened to some of your interviews, but it's 19.
Oh, yeah. we're 19. We're sandwiched between Hong Kong and Guatemala or something like that. So Nicaragua, you know, so the whole thing, if you're right at the top, okay, things are sweet, man. You're making, average CEO makes about 15, 16 million a year right now. So they don't have to worry about anything because they can just spend down their stuff. They never have to worry about it. But for the average person, we're horrific, you know, and our retirement plans are horrible. Now, one of the most disturbing things about the Mercer report is that in terms of integrity, you know, in terms of honesty, if you will, we were ranked the worst.
Wow. And that brings up a really good point, because I heard you mention it. You know, we're forced, so to speak, to invest in a 401k. And I'm old enough to remember, and I was in college and all this stuff. You know, I remember when the 401k came out, the 401k was only pitched as a supplement, because predominantly back then, many people had defined benefit packages, right? And this 401k opportunity was only to supplement that. That was supposed to be for supplementary investing above and beyond your defined benefits package. And then they were like, wait a minute, this is a really great extraction tool where we can steal everybody's money. So if we just flip the script and change the game, and we go from defined benefit and force all this money into the market, we'll be able to just take everybody's money.
Yeah, and that's what it was. And actually, I don't know if you've seen the movie I was in, The Baby Boomer Dilemma.
I have not seen that. I'll check it out.
Yeah, people go check out the trailer, boomermovie.com. I'm in it with, you know, Ted Bennett was a friend of mine, the guy who actually created the 401k.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, Ted's a great guy. He's like 80 and he's still going strong. But so the whole 401k, which he developed in 79 or something like that, it was only meant to be like an ornament on a Christmas tree. All right. You know, the whole retirement plan is supposed to be a defined benefit pension in Social Security, which are annuities, which are contracts. So, you know, make a long story short, then that's, we can go on this different, but any event, so that whole change, because back then, TD, a defined benefit plan maybe cost 7, 8, 9% of payroll to really fund a true retirement plan. Whereas if you can get into a 401k, it's going to only cost you maybe 4 or 5%. Okay. And not only that, when you're putting all the money in the 401k, there's no risk.
Right. Exactly.
So they can buy the politicians. So you tell people to put these money into target date funds, which they did in 2006, to say, as long as people buy target date funds, there's no risk to the employer or the asset manager. So they're guaranteed the income flow, and there's no risk.
Yeah. Well, why wouldn't you do that?
Why wouldn't you do that? So I can take my $30 million out, or like Larry Fink, $35 million out in stock from BlackRock, and be taxed at very low rates. So that's what happened. So this is essentially it greatly reduced the cost. And number two is that, and they've given all the control of those savings to Wall Street through through mutual funds primarily, whether, you know, whether it be active or passive. And that, so, and so, so people don't even understand this, but I think roughly about 80% of the money goes into target date funds, which I've written a book about it, and go to barryjamesdyke.com. I wrote my second book called The Highway to Serfdom. To this day, I still don't understand these books. Oh, you have there. Oh, there. Okay. So that's what I wrote on target date funds. So these are the primary investment today.
And, you know, I work for a fee-based financial planner, CLU, CHFC, CRPC. He had every letter of the alphabet behind his name. We charge an annual planning fee. He would sell loaded target funds inside a wrap account and charge an annual fee. And he made sure that they had 12B1 fees. And I mean, people were paying 8 or 9% probably in addition to their annual fee. And it was, I mean, it was very Wall Street-esque. It was robbery, in my opinion.
Yeah. So unfortunately, it's gotten worse, TD, which I didn't think it could. But what has happened now is it has. And so what you have, so the employers and major employers, whether it be in Texas or anywhere in this country, so they have people are lucky that they get a match in their 401k. But conversely, the government employees, which we should have all been like teachers or firefighters, with all due respect, and I love these folks, but so some of these government retirement plans, Texas is a big one. You get the Texas teachers and the whole thing, so I'm not making anything up now. Where some of these retirement plans are costing maybe 20-30% of payroll to fund the defined benefit. So the average citizen gets a Yugo for a 401k, but a lot of your public employees, they're getting Mercedes.
Yeah, Porsches.
Or Maybachs, you know? It's a tough one. And so this is what's happening. So I'm just trying to passion because this will not end well in the end.
I think it's a good segue. Maybe you could talk about, because many people are completely unaware of this. And then other guys like Dave Ramsey go out of their way to kind of bash Whole Life just because they're, I think, willingly ignorant. But maybe we could talk a little bit about Boley and Coley and what these banks and corporations, where they do put their money.
Yeah.
Well, the money they've extracted from us. And then where they put it,
that was kind of, you know, it's kind of God. And I'm a Christian, so God's the most important thing in my life. But anyway, so I had to reinvent myself. I went through a horrific divorce and all this stuff, but I have, you know, I have wonderful kids, and my ex-wife did a great job with the kids. But anyway, so I had to reinvent myself, and I understood that some of the only things that really work were annuities, insurance, TD. And I stumbled upon this, 20 years ago, anyhow, that how banks owned, I heard something about banks and the really rich owning these huge life policies. Now at the time, so I started doing research. This is when I had to put like a Visa card with the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. You had to pay $5 for every article you got on, you know, but I hadn't really had much money. So I started researching it. So then I knew enough people, and I had friends in the American College, and, so I started reading about this stuff, and no one would talk to me. So I was like, so I knew a lot of these large insurance companies, whether Mass Mutual, New York Life, or Northwestern, whatever, they're doing a lot of it. But I called up some of the brokers who were doing this work, but no one would speak to me about it. Mm-hmm. So I just started studying the banking. This is how I got started studying the banking system. And when I understand, I discovered the banks own all this stuff. Now, no one would talk to me. But anyway, so I met this, or actually over the phone, never met this woman from the FDIC, this, I think it was an African-American woman, but she was so sweet and kind to me. And I said, this is what I'm looking for. And she said, well, this is how you down there. Cause I was just doing this on my own. I had nothing, no one to back me up. I had no net. And I was like, and then I figured out how to download the information from the FDIC. So it was back in 2006 where I found the banks, you know, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, I mean, you know, any of the banks, people know me for that. They all Bank of America, Bank of America. Okay. They all own major portions of their own, the tier one capital, which is the most important asset in any bank. And they house the money with life insurance companies. Now, to this day, TD, now I came up with this fact. So 2007 was this, so what are we now? 24 now, so it was how many years? 17 years ago?
Yep.
All right. I report on this 17 years ago, and that's why you have the first Pirates book, right?
Yep.
So I researched that in 2006. Okay, that's the first one, okay? To this day, the media will not acknowledge this. And it's a fact. And I would testify in court, and I testify in Congress in front of this, but it's a fact. So all these major banks all put a huge portion of their money in life insurance companies. And why do they do that? Well, they're not stupid. They're always putting $25 billion of their money into something which is bad for them. They're doing it for because of the guarantees, they get the tax law as the cash values increases, it flows to their income stream. And so that adds pennies per share for the share price. They know everyone's going to die, so the money comes into them income tax free. They know it's very stable to fund deferred compensation agreements and so forth. So I just stumbled into it and I just started digging. And so it's BOLI, which is bank owned life insurance, which is a huge component of the financial system. Now, what is amazing, what I also discovered, even like the Federal Reserve Bank, which is the central bank of the United States, this is where 75% of their 401k is in fixed annuities.
Yep. Wow. That's weird. They don't need 8% or 12%.
Yeah. So the whole thing, Dave Ramsey says you're 12%, which is a bunch of phooey. I mean, I agree with him about the debt, TD.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. I agree with him about the debt. I mean, that's what's going to kill this country. Okay.
Yeah, it is.
It's debt. I agree with him. Okay. But the whole idea about whole life or annuities being debt is total disregard for the facts.
And I think what the most enlightening and encouraging thing about all of this information, as kind of wild and as horrific and to see the control, the most fascinating thing to me is that you and I, we have access to these same contracts and we can fund these exact same contracts. We can reap much of the exact same benefit. And I think it's rather miraculous that we can still participate on this level with whole life insurance, that this hasn't been systematically removed from our access. And that I think is the biggest takeaway, in my opinion, is that once we learn about the COLI and BOLI, is that, yeah, this is what the big banks are doing. This is what the megacorps are doing. This is how they, a lot of them, this is a way that they pay their CEOs. I know, I think it was Jim Harbaugh, when he was at one of the colleges, they paid him. It was a big multi-million dollar contract. And it was basically either a whole life or an annuity policy. And that's how he was paid. And there's so many tax, it's a very brilliant design, and we have access. We can participate and put together these type of strategies and implement them. And they're not on the top shelf, and we can't reach them.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. Unfortunately, what has happened is, have you heard of Gresham's Law, TD?
Yes.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we have Gresham's Law, essentially, it was Sir Thomas Gresham. The law was bad money drives out good. Mm-hmm. So this is what we're pretty much seeing throughout the savings space today. So the really good stuff, the whole lot from the mutual companies, and so people, if they're going to be doing this, they should only do it with mutual companies, fraternal companies. Because anytime you let Wall Street get their hands on piles of money, you can be pretty much insured of corruption. So, so with a mutual company generally, or fraternal companies, you essentially, as an owner or policyholder, you're owned part of the company. Now, they have to be an insurance company. They have businesses like everyone else. They have to make profits. But my point is that you're part, you enjoy part of the profits, it's truly a mutual thing. Now, so really, if people do that, they can do that. Now, the problem with Gresham's Law is that Wall Street is taking over so many insurances. The amount of insurance companies now, TD, in the United States is roughly about, life companies roughly around 750. Okay, I forget the exact numbers, but out of those, only maybe about 160 I would deal with, you know, which are, you know, mutual or fraternal organizations. So most of the stuff I wouldn't buy it.
Sure. Yeah. No, I understand. You know, and that's why your third book is great. The Guaranteed Income book. And, you know, I just encourage everybody, you can buy this 3-book package on Barry James Dyke's website. It's Dyke with a Y. And start looking at this stuff. He has all the documentation. He has the data there. He has the source. He has the quotes. He's done the research for you. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And, you know, we still have, you know, we can't, all we can control is what we do. You know what I mean? And I'm a Christian as well. And I believe in being a good steward and maximizing and leaving a legacy. You know, we started out when we moved to Texas is we kind of changed. We had a paradigm shift and we wanted to live a slower, more intentional life, more agrarian. And one thing that me and my wife had the vision to do is like, we want to provide for our children in their lifetime, their legacy, their inheritance. So what if instead of just stockpiling all this stuff and some type of tax deferred account that you can't touch without penalty and all this other stuff, right? What if we accumulated real estate and dirt, right? And then if we get out of debt and we're cash flow positive and we have real estate, and then in our children's lifetime, we can say, hey, here's a little plot of land. Here's 5 acres. Here's 10 acres. Let's work together to see what you can make of it. Right. And then we can participate in that in real time, in a real way, where it's the exact opposite of this completely synthesized life. You know, it's OPM. What's fascinating to me when we talk about other people's money is I'm sure you know who Robert Kiyosaki is. So,
It's a small world. Matter of fact, I have a good friend of mine just co-authored a book. Ted Sedelli's The Whistleblower, and he just wrote a book on the Who Stole My Pension. Yeah, Kiyosaki's great.
Yeah, and I was a real big fan of Kiyosaki. And in the beginning, in the first couple of books, you know, it would all be about OPM and leverage. And now it is a completely different world because it is a completely different world. And it's about hard assets, real estate, and these different things. So it's interesting to even watch how Kiyosaki's focus has shifted to real assets. And, you know, and that's why I think your new crypto book is going to be really cool, because a lot of people want to stay relevant with this crypto thing, and it's cool, and it's blockchain, and it's, you know, this is a parallel thing. I don't see it as that. I think it's a scam, but that I think it's going to be cool because I think your book's going to dive into that, correct?
Yeah. Well, it's the whole thing is that the crypto, I don't know if you've read the research, there was some guy in Japan in 2008, Satoshi Son or whatever
it was. Satoshi Nakamoto or whatever.
Yeah. So we still don't know. Is there such a guy? Is it one person? Is it a group person? We still don't know. No one really knows.
CIA.
CIA, whatever it is. We don't really know. So that's how it's shared. And it reminds me of the tulip bubble in the Netherlands in the 16th or 17th century, whatever. Same thing. But this is the thing, in Pew Research now, this is not me. Pew Research released a study about a year ago, and where 75% of the population, the American population, this is Pew, not me, doesn't understand and doesn't really trust cryptocurrencies. 75% of the American public, okay? They don't trust it. Then we have the collapse of FTX and all these. I mean, There's so many of them. And all these stable value, Terra Luna, and they go bankrupt, not go bankrupt, essentially they lose all their value. So, and so 75% of the population doesn't trust them. All these companies go bankrupt. Over 9 billion losses alone with FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried. But what happens last week? What happened last week, TD, do you know?
Was it the Bitcoin ETF?
Yep. So most people don't trust it, but it went ahead anyway. And most of the Financial Times, I was reading it last night, I think Financial Times quoted that BlackRock and Fidelity got like close to 700-800 million each flow in this new speculative product, because they want something else for people to gamble with. So 75% of the population seen some incredible bankruptcies. And the amazing thing about this TD is all the supposedly these all sophisticated investors, okay, New York guys like Tiger Global Management or Thoma Bravo private equity firm or the Canadian Pension Plan or Westcap private equity, they poured billions into this crap.
Yeah,
and went bust.
Yeah,
there was no due diligence.
Yeah. And, you know, it appears to me to just be like another paper cutout wash, that there was that little small bank. I think it was in Maine that was wrapped up with FTX, and they had never managed more than $10 million. And then they magically somehow become involved with FTX. And within weeks, they're managing like over $50 million. And, you know, it's all part of this Ponzi wash scheme. And like, where can we send all of this money to wash it and make it disappear? And it literally disappears. It literally vanishes and it's gone. And, you know, we watch it over and over again. And then you hear all of these when it comes to Bitcoin and, well, this is blockchain and it's private and it's open source. So this is a real, autonomous way, and this is completely parallel, and this is how we're going to fix it, you know, this is the solution. And but meanwhile, the government is buying enormous hordes of Bitcoin, all of they them and those and the powers that shouldn't be, and all the State Street, BlackRock, Blackstone, they're all Vanguard, they're all participating in this exact same thing. And it's just like, this is just an to me, this is just another derivative. It looks like another derivative. You have this inordinate swell of value predicated upon absolutely nothing. And then, of course, you have huge fluctuations on quote unquote speculation, you know, which is just, it's just part of this wealth redistribution. And they call these fluctuations, which are the wealth transfers, you know. Well, and it's so hilarious because they always blame the speculators. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. I mean, that's just, they just prey on people's ignorance. Like, this has nothing to do with the speculators. This is a systematic transfer of wealth by design. This is the way it's set up on purpose.
Yeah. So what you're trying to do is really get the message out there, really. So what people really need, you know, they need to essentially reinforce their own balance sheet. You talk about it, agrarian, you know, we almost have to get back to the future. Now, the amazing thing is, and I'll get this, and I can't let the cat out of the bag, but and I get into, you know what, you ever hear a little company called IBM?
Yes. International Business Machine.
Yes. A little company in Armagh, and, you know, one of the largest computers, one of the, you know, funded by the Watsons. In any event, you know what they did January 1st, TD? They essentially, they terminated their 401k. They didn't terminate. Now, people can still defer money into the 401k, okay? They can still do that from a tax point of view. But what they did instead is that they changed the whole bloody retirement plan to a cash balance plan.
To a defined benefit package.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So it's back to the future, you know, so it's just because the 401k is horrible.
Yeah. Right. And IBM has historically been known as one of the premier best companies as far as for employee benefits and all that stuff. And it would make sense that they would be ahead of it. and making these calibrations.
Yeah, because I've looked at it because I have a number of clients who are engineers with IBM, the whole thing. And it's always great when I'm doing planning for people. People have really good benefit packages, and IBM, you know, the people that have the pensions and the 401ks and all this stuff and wellness and all this, really, you know, it makes it really a good place to work. And IBM has really been at the vanguard of all that stuff. So, but again, something you're going to hear in the mainstream press, but I get into that in detail and, you know, in the Pirates 3. So,
yeah. And it's so funny because that is counterintuitive to everything you hear from Dave Ramsey to Jim Cramer to certainly everything on the Mockingbird mainstream media. And here you have a major corporation going back to a defined benefit plan. That is incredible. But you know, we're getting the word out and asking people to just do a little bit of research because look, we all can't be Barry Dykes. You've taken the time and you've quoted the sources and you've done that research. We're busy trying to live our life, raise our children, invest the best we know how into the future, do all these things that are so much more important. What are your five F's, Barry?
Five F's. Yeah. That's a good man. Well, essentially, yeah, that's, I kind of live my rule, my life, you know, first I call them the five F's. The first thing is my faith. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's my creation with the creator. And I couldn't do this work without my faith in God. I just couldn't do it. Number two is family, of course. You know, families, you know, faith is first, family is second. You know, why do we do all this? Why do we work so hard? It's not just about me. It's about my children, and the people who I'm really interconnected to. So it's really, I couldn't do it because it's not just about me. The third, obviously, is friends. No one does any of this stuff on their own TD. I certainly don't. I couldn't do this. I mean, I'm very blessed. People like Nelson Nash and Bob Castle, the founder of Leap Systems, and a lot of other people have become really good friends and mentors, and a lot of fans of developing the industry who've been really become really heartfelt friends who've really encouraged me to go on. Hang on one second. Sorry about this. Hang on. Fitness. You know, which is, you got to be physically fit. I mean, I'm getting older, whatever, but you know, fitness and eating right and all that stuff is, you know, it's crucial. I mean, because they're polluting the food system like they're polluting the monetary system. So, you know, getting back to the farm, getting organic and stuff, there's a lot of, you know, you feel better and having exercise and all that stuff and good sleep and all that stuff. And then the last thing is really finances, you know, it's really, really important, you know, and I think, but those are kind of the priorities. So my faith, my family, my friends, my fitness, and then finance, you know, so it's in the top, you know, it's, yeah, really, really important. Okay. Because having right finance, you can have better relationships with your family and everyone else, but really I couldn't do it without my faith first.
And that's why I wanted to have you on, because I would say if you're a Christian, you would have the same priority structure as Barry and myself. And while finances are important, they are much further down the list, which is why I think it's critical and essential that you find good voices of value and dive in, because they've kind of already done a lot of the research. Now, you don't just want to blindly accept it. You want to validate it and verify it. But the rest of us, just like Barry, we're all... it's our faith, our family, our friends, our health. And this is everything that our channel is about. And yeah, finances are on there, and don't become so bogged down with that. You know, use good resources, listen to voices of value, and then develop your own strategy or borrow a strategy or implement multiple strategies. That was the main reason, you know, these books, Pirates of Manhattan 1 and 2, and then the Guaranteed Income book. These there's great information. There's it's all cited, and I want to encourage you to go over to Barry. Your website is barryjamesdyke.com.
Yeah, Barry. Yeah, people can sign up for it because everyone, you know, one of the downsides of me, I get so busy in the research and running a business. I know I'm not the greatest communicator unless I'm doing podcasts and things like that. But yeah, people go to, they can sign up, buy the books, or, you know, they can sign up. I'll let them know when the next two books are coming out. Just wrapping these books has been a Herculean task, TD. I mean, I said, I've written three books. You know, the last one shouldn't be too hard. So, man, I couldn't do it without my faith, man. This has been hard. I mean, but I can see, you know, God's like, keep going. Just keep going. And so it's been really, really difficult. But I know it's going to help people in the end.
That's what we appreciate. We appreciate the information. It's a lot of hard work. It will pay off, you know, as unfortunately, you know, I think the mainstream is always going to be mainstream. And this is something that Nelson Nash talked about, is if we could just educate 3 to 10%, you know, it's not like, don't try to convince everybody, because it's just not going to happen. You know, that's not. It's not a reality, but we're just looking for 10 people. You know, if each of us could reach 10 people with the truth, and then they could have some fundamentals to build an infrastructure on for their life. And we would certainly hope that it would be faith, family, friends, food, and finances. I mean, what an incredible legacy. And then you've written these three books. You have two more coming to build on this foundation, to provide this information to the rest of us that are trying to build this hierarchical infrastructure, right? Where finance is at the bottom, even though it's incredibly important, and it's very difficult to eat if you are in financial distress. And the other thing, if you're in financial distress, you cannot help anyone else. You certainly can't leave a legacy for your children. So all of this information is critical. And I think Barry is an incredible resource. Sign up for his newsletter, because you'll be notified when the new books come out. I can't wait. I just wish I had a little bit more time to read, but I'm working on that.
Yeah, it's hard. So yeah, even my office staff. So hopefully I'll be coming with audiobooks and, I probably would do it with AI or whatever. I didn't do it because of a long story with Amazon, you know, so I stopped doing, but the next one will probably be Amazon. But tell people to go to my website to buy them. Now, my books, now there's resellers in some of my books, TD, and some people paying like $100 a copy. My books, like, you know, but they can buy my, you know, on my website for $28, but there's actually people do it. You know, there's nothing I can do about it, but there's actually people resell my books for $100. I mean, it's just nothing I can do about it. It's capitalism. But so you can go to my website or you can go to Amazon. But some people are, you know, they're selling my books. Some is $100 a copy.
Well, Bear, I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for all this research, all the Herculean effort that goes into it. It's certainly not lost on me. We greatly appreciate it. Looking forward to the books that are coming out. And hey, y'all, thanks so much for watching, for listening, and for following the Fearless Podcast. This is a value for value proposition. So if you love and enjoy the information that we bring you, please go over to thetexasboys.com. And if you're looking for some organic raw honey or some coffee or maybe some merch, check us out over there. It supports the cause, and we love and appreciate y'all. And remember, stay fearless, my friends. Oh,